Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
Since the draft's inception, this slot has been the birthplace of the Gold Jacket legends like Deion Sanders and Junior Seau, dominant forces who redefined their positions. But for every Hall of Famer, there's a cautionary tale of can't-miss prospects who never found his footing. From the game-changing superstars to the picks the teams wish they wouldn't take back, let's delve into the high-stakes history of the number 5 overall selection in the NFL Draft. And as always, we're joined by Ed Cleese. You're in the Pigpen. Pigskin Dispatch's 32-day countdown of NFL Draft picks is coming up now. Ladies and gentlemen, you can count on your one hand the number of days till the NFL Draft. It's 5 days coming up, so today we're going to talk about the fifth spot in NFL Draft history. Our friend Ed Cleese joins us once again. Ed, welcome back.
Hey, Darren, top five. It's hard to believe we've made it this far.
The top five. We're going to talk about the top five of pick number five today.
Yep.
In this conversation.
I got two top fives for
two pick top up. Fives. All right. Well, like five golden rings in the Christmas song.
Right.
We have two top fives in the top five picks. So, all right. So what's your take, overall take on pick number five?
Well, now that we've gotten to the top five, we're going to mix it up a little bit because I feel like we get serious, right? And we can really only have time to talk about the extremes because I think at this point now we're talking 45 years of draft when I'm talking, you know, going back to 1980. So at this point, when it's a top five pick, I think in a way you probably remember almost all of them one way or another. So we really can't go through and talk about everybody like, oh, I remember this guy, I remember that guy. So what I've decided to do is we're going to do our top five busts. We're going to do our top five best picks. And then, you know, the couple of honorable mentions that didn't make the cut. There's going to be a lot of guys we don't mention that either got lucky and just missed the cut for the busts or got a little unlucky and didn't quite make even the honorable mention list. There are a number of guys we're not going to talk about here that were still memorable.
All right. Well, okay. Let's get at it. We got a lot
let's
to
start,
talk about.
Let's start with the bottom five. The five biggest busts taken number five and number five. I've got Cedric Jones, a defensive end taken by the Giants in 1996. His first 3 years, he only had three starts, but he played in those games. So he wasn't hurt. He couldn't get on the field to start. It was more of like a rotational guy. Obviously, you take a guy number six, you're not hoping in year three. You're hoping in year three that you've got yourself more than a starter, and he wasn't even that. He did start all 16 games in his fourth and fifth seasons, which wound up being his last 2 years in the league. He had 15 career sacks. And then just really quick, looking at guys that the Giants could have taken right around him. So I'm not going like, hey, this guy got taken in the fourth round. I'm talking about guys that would have been on the board that were probably in the running. You had Terry Glenn, Eddie George, Marvin Harrison, and Willie Anderson, a great offensive lineman for the Bengals that were all there at the time.
Yeah, Giants fans are probably still cracking their knuckles over missing on some of those guys.
Yep, didn't work well. So we move on to number four. I've got Curtis Enos, taken in 1998, a running back out of Penn State, right, from went to the Bears. He had one okay season. He did battle some injuries, but I remember, you know, kind of reading and thinking, I think, yeah, he was a little banged up, but I think they also kind of saw the writing on the wall, like, this guy doesn't have the burst. It's just not there. He wound up having like a degenerative knee issue. So it was over pretty fast for him. And what probably really hurts is Fred Taylor was on the board and got taken like three picks later as a running back. Keith Brooking was there. Tekeo Spikes was there. Randy Moss was there. Now, I'll give the Bears a bit of a pass on that one because a lot of teams passed on Moss. We talked about that when we talked about him. So he was falling down the board that day. But he was there, and they wanted a skill guy. So
and with Moss, the Vikings passed on the Bears quite
yeah.
a bit.
Yeah, really, no kidding. Yeah. Very good. Very good. I don't know if that's very good, Darren, but it's I'll give you a little tip of the cap there. Going on to number three would be one that's a real shame. And I've got Justin Blackmon, taken in 2012 wide receiver by the Jags. He had some trouble in college. He had an okay rookie year. Things were looking okay. Then before his second year, he got suspended for drugs. He would have like a 4-game suspension, and he came back and had two massive games, like big time games. He immediately got in trouble again. He never played football again after that second year. Tons of trouble. Just kept coming. I think even recently I read that he's had some issues. So he just could not. So 2 years in the league and he's done, all because of the off-field stuff. So a bummer there for the Jags. Luke Kuechly was on the board, taken right around there. Stephon Gilmore, Fletcher Cox, Bruce Irvin. So there were some guys there. And so I want to point something out. So Blackmon was a receiver, right? And the guys I just read that were available were Kuechly, Gilmore, Fletcher Cox, and Bruce Irvin, all on defense. And this is an example of why I say when you're in the top of the draft, you always got to take best player available. Because you know what? Maybe the Jags, I don't remember this, but maybe the Jags had convinced themselves that we have to have a receiver or we have to have a skill guy. And maybe they were like, well, you know, Blackmon's got some of these issues, but he's the best receiver on the board, so let's take him. And in the meantime, you pass up on a Hall of Fame middle linebacker. You know, how does that look 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now? So that's why I don't think that when people talk about do you take for need or best player, I don't think there should ever be a debate, because when you're drafting, you should never be drafting for that season anyway. You should always be going for the best player. And this is how you get yourself in trouble, is when you pigeonhole yourself into eliminating a Hall of Famer because for some reason you don't think you need him in April of this year, you know. But it turns out that, of course, any of those guys would have been significantly better.
Yeah, interesting.
So, yep. And then moving on to number two is probably one you'll remember. Number two is Trev Alberts, taken in 1994, linebacker by the Colts. 7 career starts. Now, he did wind up having a media career, and then he's had a very successful administrative career in athletics. He's been an athletic director, so things turned out just fine for Trev, but it did not turn out fine for him as an NFL player. And what I really remember about that is, do you remember when Mel Kiper and Bill Tobin got into it on the draft? And Bill Tobin said, who the hell is Mel Kiper?
Right.
Well, it was Mel Kiper telling the Colts that they made a mistake taking Trev Alberts. So
Kiper was actually right for once.
Yeah. So, but the only thing is, he was telling them to take Dilfer. But you know, he can leave that part off. He can just tell them, I just told them
the guy has a Super Bowl win. So.
Yeah, should take Albert. So they did pass up on some good defensive players. The Colts did instead. Bryant Young, Hall of Famer, I think was taking the next pick. So a guy that made 7 starts versus a guy that went to the Hall of Fame that played similar positions. Sam Adams was a great defensive lineman. And Aaron Glenn, the defensive back who's the current coach for the Jets, was available as well.
Wow.
But the biggest bust ever taken at number 5 was by the Cleveland Browns, if you can believe that. It was 1987. They took linebacker Mike Junkin. And essentially, from kind of reading about it, it's almost like he got to camp. And they were like, this is a mistake. They moved him inside. They moved him outside. People thought they were misusing him. And it kind of just turned out that maybe he just couldn't play. They fired Marty Schottenheimer not too long into Junkin's career. And he went and coached the Chiefs. And Marty brought him with him to Kansas City. But he never even, I think, barely made the team there either.
Why would they draft that position when they could have drafted a quarterback that would have failed after 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, really.
What's going on with them?
They did pass on Shane Conlon, who was a really nice linebacker, Jerome Brown, who was a dominant defensive lineman, and this one's going to really hurt. They passed on Rod Woodson, who only went a few picks later for Mike Junkin.
Yeah. Wow.
Yes.
That's, Yeah, that's a downer. So let's bring us up a little bit and talk about some players that had some good careers.
Let's take a break for a moment to tell you about a new product so that you can take and put your football knowledge that we feed you each and every day to the test. It is the Pigskin Trivia Drive on pigskindispatch.com. You're the quarterback. You call the shots, choose your play, grind it out with a run, pick up steady gains on a short pass, or risk it all with a long pass for a massive chunk of yardage. It isn't just a quiz. It's a march for glory. It's the Pigskin Trivia Drive. Remember, when the huddle's over, when you pick your play, the faster you answer, the more yards you gain. Hesitation is the enemy of the end zone. Keep those chains moving. Cross that yellow line to reset your downs and earn a critical audible. Stuck on a tough defensive look? Use those audibles to strip away two wrong answers and find your open receiver. Watch the play clock. You've got just 25 seconds to make the read. Take too long, and it's a 5-yard penalty for delay of game. It's game action. In this stadium, your brain is the engine, but the clock is the opponent. The mission is simple. Score as many touchdowns as possible in 5 minutes, and when the clock hits zero, your score hits the global leaderboard. Are you a bench warmer or a Hall of Famer? Step up to the line. Your drive starts now on pigskindispatch.com, the Trivia Drive. Don't let your football history knowledge go to waste. Try the Pigskin Trivia Drive on pigskindispatch.com. And now, let's get back into our program.
You bet. So the quarterback list on here was Tua in 2020, teetering. Mark Sanchez, not a bust, not a hit in 2009, you know, had some
maybe a butt fumble away from.
Yeah, a butt fumble. Unfortunately, that's what he's known for. And Jim McMahon was taken fifth overall, in 1982. So a very memorable player there. My honorable mentions, it's going to be crazy that he's not on the list, is like Khalil Mack, 2014. Ooh. Yeah, I didn't have him in my top five. It's going to be close. Jamal Lewis. Taken in 2000, running back for the Ravens. And then near and dear to my heart and the heart of every Washington Redskin fan is Sean Taylor, taken in 2004, who I can promise you would have absolutely been on the top five. He was on his way. We're talking about an all-time talent, a unique body type for that position at safety, tall and lanky and intimidating, a throwback player, a legend for the Redskin fan base. I may have seen his best game ever. I was there in Green Bay in 2007, about 3 weeks before he got shot. So about a month before he died, about six weeks later, he was killed. There's actually an oral history about it. If you Google Sean Taylor Packers game, that there's quotes from Favre, there's quotes from his defensive coordinator, Greg Williams, where people just marveled at, I've never seen anybody cover ground like that in a game before. It's like, I threw the ball. And I threw it, and then number 21 was there. Wherever I went, he was just there like radar. I couldn't shake him. Sean Taylor was a phenomenal player. He was incredible to watch. Unfortunately, his career was just too short to make the list.
Okay. Well, who did you put in your top five?
Well, this was – I kind of waffled on this, but I just said, darn it, I'm doing it. So number five is Ja'Marr Chase, taken in 2021. I had Justin Jefferson in the top five, and I had CeeDee Lamb in the top five. I actually think that Chase is a little bit better than both of those guys.
I would agree.
He's on a ridiculous pace. It is ridiculous. Okay. Darren, he has 352 catches in the last 3 years. In the last 3 years. And he has 54 touchdowns already in his career. This guy is unstoppable. And yes, he's benefited from Burrow, of course, but Burrow's missed a ton of time in Chase's career, a ton of games. And it doesn't matter. It's incredible. He is an unbelievable receiver. And I went crazy over both CD and Justin Jefferson, but Chase is better. He's the best receiver in the NFL right now. There's a lot to choose from. There's a lot of really good ones. There's a lot of really good. Puka comes to mind too. There's a lot of really good ones, but Chase is, boy, if I'm doing an expansion draft for my team, he might be like, I'm right there taking Ja'Marr. He is awesome. He's going to move up this list.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right there. Okay, so who do you have above Ja'Marr Chase?
Another guy that's probably going to go to the Hall of Fame, I think, is Patrick Peterson, taken in 2011, cornerback by the Cardinals. What might hurt him is that he was very much in that lockdown corner mold, which means he wasn't, he was doing such a good job of eliminating a side of the field that he wasn't necessarily compiling a ton of stats. He does have 3 first team all pros, 8 Pro Bowls, all decade team, which is crazy. He had 4 punt return touchdowns as a rookie. So 4 in his rookie year. I think they went away from having him return kicks after a while. I don't think, you know, it was too risky to have him there. But for a decade, he was
maybe they felt they were scoring too much with
maybe, yeah. For a decade, he was just about the best corner in the league, you know, give or take. And, you know, played for the Cardinals, was after the Warner years. So, you know, it was on the Carson Palmer team. You know, so they're pretty good there for a couple years. They were decent. So he had some moments, but mostly in obscurity, which is probably another reason we don't talk about him. But I think a Hall of Fame player.
Yeah, I think he's probably on his way to Canton, I'm sure.
Yep.
Good solid guy. Okay, who's above him?
Well, the next 3 all do have jackets, and we're not going to argue that. It's the offensive LT. LaDainian Tomlinson is 3, taken in 2001. 7th all-time in yards. But really the thing for me is that guy was a end zone seeker. He was a heat-seeking missile to the end zone. He is 2nd all-time in rushing touchdowns. Really, really incredible. He caught the ball very well. Very, very consistent throughout his career. Kind of did it all. You know, was an explosive player. Bunch of big highlights. If you're going to knock him, I think you'd look at – he only played in 10 playoff games. And to be perfectly – Frank, he was not good in 9 of them. In their 2007 was the 1 year the Chargers had playoff success. They won 2 games. He did not perform particularly well in those 2 games. Then they went to the AFC Championship game in New England, you might remember. You might remember that was the 2017, the undefeated Patriots. That was a close game. Mm-hmm. Phillip Rivers played that game on a torn ACL. And LT had 2 carries in the game. Because that wasn't it a migraine that he was out with, I think
yeah, it was something odd like that, yeah.
And he got a lot of flack for it. And I remember him sitting there on the sideline with his helmet and his visor on, just kind of sitting there during the game. And it's a very tricky thing for me in my living room to tell a guy you're not being tough enough or to get out there, because I have no idea what he's actually feeling or going through. But there were some whispers that people were frustrated. And like, you know, why is he not out there? So he never had that like postseason moment or success, but it does not detract from his incredible career. And the fact that, quite being just plainly saying this as plainly as possible, he scored the 2nd most rushing touchdowns in the history of the NFL, which is pretty darn good.
Yeah. And he was a fantasy football
bonanza, yes,
for anybody that had him on their team.
He was like the first pick in every fantasy draft for like 8 years.
Yeah. The guy was a stud at that. Definitely. Yep. I'm surprised that you had him at 3, though. I mean, I have a pretty good idea who your other 2 are going to be, but I'm a little bit surprised by that. But go ahead. Let's talk about the next guy.
2 is Junior Seau. We're staying in San Diego with the Chargers. Taken in 2000, 20 years in the NFL. And unfortunately, maybe we know now that may have been too many for him. He 8 times over 100 tackles, 6-time All-Pro. And for me, you know, he was taken in 1990. So for me, Junior Seau, the 90s NFL, completely synonymous with the 90s NFL. I feel like he was like the defensive player of the 90s in a lot of ways. There's some others, but like he really sticks out, and he was so hard to miss, Darren, in a Chargers game, like everywhere, right? And he played with a ton of passion,
sideline to sideline,
super emotional, a playmaker, 55. He looked cool. He had a cool name. He was, you know, he had so much juice to him. He was just sort of that, you know, when you're playing outside with your friends, who's going to, you know, I'm Seau, you know what I mean? Like, he was just a legend. Awesome player, was still very good as an older player, you know, bounced around some teams, wound up with the Patriots, was actually on the 2007 Patriots team. I don't think he played all that much, but, you know, was still in the league. Obviously, the tragedy with his taking his own life and the head issues and things like that, terrible, terrible. But when you talk about a legendary player at a really cool position in a kind of a forgotten place now, you know, San Diego. It's a shame because the Chargers now, it's almost like they don't exist in a way because they have no fans. Nobody cares about them in LA, but they really did care about the Chargers and I know in San Diego. And I know they cared very much about Junior Seau. And it's kind of a shame that they're not there anymore. But he kind of always will be in a way, right? You know, when you think about that era of that franchise.
Yeah, most definitely. Tragic story, but an awesome player.
Yeah, so. Just incredible.
All right. Well, who do you have as the number one spot?
You know what? Some people might push back on this, but it's number one's Deion Sanders. Taken in 1989. Darren, I have nothing. All I have written is Deion Sanders, 1989 cornerback Falcons, because I don't need anything else. He's the best cornerback of all time. End of sentence, period, end of sentence. And this is coming from a guy who's
best coverage corner.
Well,
there's two aspects to the game.
That's the job of the corner. Okay, that's the main job of the corner. That is why you draft a corner, is to take away the best receiver on the other team to cover somebody. And then you're talking to a guy who's one of his heroes is Darryl Green. All right. But Deion was better. Deion's the best corner of all time. The people that wanted to always poke holes in him always said, well, he doesn't tackle very well. I'm actually not even sure that was necessarily true. But there was just something that I think that people wanted to try to find negative, because we're talking about a guy that literally just shut off a side of the field for like a decade, meaning literally there were games and statistics where they said no targets, right? The quarterback didn't even go there. All right. And he was great against great players too, including Jerry Rice, who probably struggled more against Deion than anybody else he ever faced. And it is no coincidence, Darren, that when he left the Falcons to go to the 49ers in 1994, the 49ers won the Super Bowl in 1994. Then the next year in 1995, where did he go?
Cowboys.
And who won the Super Bowl in 1995?
Cowboys. Okay.
He shifted the balance of that era of the Cowboys 49ers rivalry. I've never seen a player at that position that was that good. He did have the added element. I believe it was 15 return touchdowns in his career between punts, kicks, interceptions.
He even played a little offense too.
A little bit of offense too. Yeah. A little bit of offense. I think that all the teams kind of wanted to dabble with that, but then they were like, dude, we can't risk getting this guy hurt on offense. A really kind of a funny story is in the second game of the season in 1992, the Redskins played the Falcons. And the Redskins rookie was Desmond Howard, the Heisman Trophy winner. Mm-hmm. And who did not wind up having a very good career as a receiver, but was a good returner. And early in the game, the Falcons punted to the Redskins. And there was like a throwback. Like I think Brian Mitchell caught it and threw it a lateral over to Desmond Howard. And Desmond Howard ran for a touchdown. And apparently this kind of irked Deion. Like, oh, everybody's talking about this young kid being the returner. So on the next kickoff, just, you know, 2 minutes later, the Redskins kick the ball off to Deion. He takes it 101 yards to the house. And he dances on the way, like as a way to say, watch this kid. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I'll let you have your moment for like 90 seconds before I take the spotlight away from you. And I personally really appreciated Deion's persona. I liked it. I think it was good for the game. The guy never once got in trouble off the field. Like it was never it was never a problem. He was just a showman. He had fun with it. I think he created a character called Primetime. I think it was very purposeful. I think it was part of his shtick and his bit. And I think that he was kind of like Deion Sanders for a lot of the time. And then when the camera came on, he was prime time. And he put on a show. I think that has value for me. I think there's a lot of reasons that a guy goes to the Hall of Fame and is a memorable player. I think football's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be interesting and entertaining. And so you had this amazing player who also had a ton of bravado and did these fun dances and would trot into the end zone. And that's what it's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be fun. I never thought he ever crossed the line into like poor sportsmanship or anything like that. You know, he was a ton of fun. He was like, you know, so cool. And beyond all that, I think he's the best corner to ever play in the NFL. And he's number one on my list here.
Interesting. Interesting. I mean, I think he is one of the greatest athletes that's ever played the game of football and, you know, definitely one of the top corners, but I don't know that I would have had him number one on this list with LaDainian Tomlinson and Junior Seau, you know, right there. I almost maybe would have had him second or third on this list and had one of the others up at the top because I think their careers as far as the impact that their position, I think might have been even a little bit more than what Deion Sanders. That's hard to say because he was definitely an impactful player. But I think he was missing that element of tackling because teams would run on him. You know, I don't know that he would survive it in today's game where people are running the zone reads and bouncing things to the outside where that corner does have to have responsibility of stopping a run once they break contain. But, you know, in his era, definitely, he was no better ball hawk on a field than Deion Sanders, and maybe never a better punt and kick returner than Deion Sanders because he was an athlete.
He was, and I'm not often wrong, Darren, and I'm not wrong here either.
Okay. All right. Well, that is definitely a great list. When we're arguing about the top three, who should be number one, I think that's the first time we've had that happen in our 20-some episodes that we've had. But we've had a lot of Hall of Famers in this pick also. We had 9 altogether. You talked about some of them with Deion and Junior Seau and LaDainian and Tomlinson. But we have also had Mike Haynes from the New England Patriots, where he was drafted in 1976. Of course, we know him for some other teams. Mike Ditka wasn't always a coach. He was a great tight end for the Chicago Bears, 1961. Len Dawson, drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers, who ended up ejecting him a couple years later, along with some other great quarterbacks like Unitas and some other Hall of Famers to take Ted Marchabrota, 1957. And Ted Marchabrota, by the way, not a Hall of Fame, but 1953, he was drafted in the fifth spot. And then we had 3 years in a row during World War II and just after. Steve Van Buren, Philadelphia Eagles, 1944. Elroy, Crazy Legs Hirsch, 1945 by the Rams, and the Giants took George Connor in 1946. So a lot of great Hall of Fame players, 9 of them all together to go with the ones that you talked about since 1980. And we talked a little bit about the draft picks, draft stat of the day. Before I do that, I almost forgot again, our most popular position taken, Deion Sanders is a defensive back more times than any other position at the number 5 spot. A draft stat of the day talks a little bit about the monopolies of college football in the NFL draft in the top 5. In 1946, Notre Dame became the first school to produce 3 of the first 5 picks in a single draft with Dankowitz, Johnny Lujack, and George Connor. This feat was later matched by Michigan State in 1967, USC in 1977, and Oklahoma in 2010, when you have 3 players from your team in the top 5. That's pretty remarkable, and it's happened 4 times in National Football League draft history.
Boomer Sooner.
Yeah, there you go. But it was the Golden Domers that did it first, so remember that. The Heisman Trophy winner, too. All right. Well, that takes us to the end of our day number 5, slot number 5 discussion. We are going to go into the top 4 tomorrow, the number 4 spot. So stay tuned. Ed, we'll see you back then.
See you tomorrow, Darren.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Oh. Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones, too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.